Your order. First order of business is review and approval of the minutes from July 11th.
I don't know if I was at the meeting here, Stacey, but they helped. Yeah.
Is that a motion to approve?
Well, do you need, you need a motion to approve. Legally, always, if I can, because I wasn't an attendant. Legally,
you can do it.
Okay, yep, you can do that.
Okay.
And I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to adopt the minutes of July 11th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same. Okay, we have the minutes out of the way. And we do have a quorum, so. Casey and. Member applications. Ooh.
Yeah, so the Bill, just to let you know who's in the room, so you have Jerry and Lee, myself, Carmen, and Counselor Bolt is with us today.
Okay.
And also.
Good morning.
Also, Kevin and Kara and Justin are here, all from the county. So we just want to talk real quick about the. The weed board applications. As you know, there were three terms that were expiring in the districts that yourself, Jerry, and Kent. And at the time, the application deadline came in, there were no other applications besides the three of yours. So in terms of weighty decisions on who you should pick. There aren't any, but that's for you guys to that's for you guys to do here officially anyway. So I'll let Jerry handle that, but it's for you guys to approve here.
Okay. So we have Bill and Kent and myself that have thrown our name back in, I guess.
That's correct.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I move we approve the applicants that have applied for their position on the weed board.
Okay, we have a motion. I can second that, I guess, too. So we have a motion and a second to adopt the three members back onto the board. Other discussion about them?
There's only one guy that I'm not too awful in favor of, but anyhow, yeah.
Yeah.
The brewing guy, yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. All right. Hearing no further discussion, all in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed, same. Welcome back, Bill.
We got to move this stuff out.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was really worried.
Yeah. I seen your signs out, so that was good.
Great for you.
So there's those are the three with the terms that were expiring, the four-year terms expiring. As you know, we have one vacant position, the position for District 5, which is the Yackel, Amboy, Chulachi area, which I've approached about, I'd say, 14, 15 different people involved in ag in that area, and I haven't received anything back in terms of people that are interested. So that... The way that works, it's a little bit different than the expiring term process in which, as you know, you essentially reapply or restate your interest in coming back. Or a new person would apply a little bit longer application with 10 signatures. In this case, with a vacant position, essentially the BOCC, the Board of County Councilors, can just appoint somebody from that area that is qualified for the position. So it's a little bit easier of a process, and based on what we've been seeing, the difficulty in finding somebody from that area, it's probably good that it's an easy process once somebody is willing to do it, then Mark and the BOCC can just appoint them. For essentially for the remainder of the, in this case, 2 years that are still on that term. So,
I have a possible person.
Okay, good.
I don't want to bring that up now or later.
Okay, later's fine.
Casey, did you get anybody from the timber people?
That's one I
have. We haven't yet. I've
put a note out, so I don't know.
Okay. I've approached a couple of people in Christmas trees specifically, and yeah, one looks promising. I'll let you know about that one, but not timber. So
you might as well throw your name out. When
The one I was going to throw out is Randy Loffer.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
He lives right at the end of Healy Road, right at the private road before you go into the forest. He's actually got a tree farm.
Yeah.
And they've had it in the family for years.
That'd be good.
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, Tree Farmer of the Year two years.
So, yeah. And he may be interested.
Yeah. Sounds good. I'll get a hold of him.
Disappointing him, we'll tell him that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, send him a letter. You have been appointed to serve. Yeah.
Another one of these deals where they didn't say no quick enough. And
exactly.
The railroad helped them out.
Yep. Choo choo.
247-5596.
You're on it.
5596.
Okay. Weed free gravel, Kara, I guess. You're gonna take that?
Yeah, we needed your direction in that area. We received an email from Laura Massey at the WSDA asking about inspecting gravel pits, and basically if any counties had the ability to do that or were currently doing that. Apparently the state does not have that ability, but they've been receiving a lot of calls about it. In the past, I believe some of our inspectors have done two separate inspections. As far as that goes, if you're interested in the standards, it's very similar to the weed-free forage standards that we currently follow for weed-free hay and mulch program. Sorry about tossing Justin.
Thanks.
Anyway, so we have done two in the past. It was basically the same standards where you're going to be walking the perimeter. I think you need to inspect the property twice a year. And wanted to get your guys' feedback on if you think that that's a good direction to go, if we should let the state know that we are capable of doing that, or what you guys thought on it.
So if we do...
When do we have to make a decision about it? Excuse me, Jerry.
All right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I don't think there's any kind of end date for this. They were just trying to get information right now.
Feedback?
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather have the full board here rather than make a decision today. Yeah, and it's good to bring it forward that way, but so then we have some real meat discussion on it.
Mm-hmm. The only issues that we've possibly considered would be the walking the perimeter of some of these sites could be interesting, seeing as
pretty
I think
challenging.
Pretty challenging. Yeah. You know, a lot of the work is happening down here, and the perimeter's, you know, 200 feet higher and on the edge of a cliff or a gravel mine. So just some different things to consider, but needed your guys' feedback on that.
So if I could real quick, Lee, what the state would do is simply list us as being a weed board that does in fact certify gravel on their website. There's no time frame involved. It's just who has the ability and is willing is what it is. But if we were to actually start the program, we would need to, try to maintain it as something, because you would have to go to each gravel pit twice a year. And if a gravel pit was interested in doing it and they were getting a little bit, they're getting a little bit extra money for that type of gravel, if it was for a certain type of situation, they would probably want to continue it. So we wouldn't want it to be a stop and start situation. We want to commit to it.
So would it be a voluntary, trying to find the word, compliance, a request from the gravel pit, or are you going to do all pits?
No. Request from the gravel pit, similar to weed-free forage. Yeah, they would need to request it. They would have some business reason for wanting to do it. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
So it's not that we are kind of mandated to go into each pit and then, because once we start that, we'd want to cover every pit, not skip anybody. That'd be the other bad deal.
Yeah.
So
yeah, request.
So it'd be like the weed free on the hay.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, that doesn't sound too bad.
Can a gravel operator say, we're going to have this pile go to, I'm sure it's because they're running gravel to up north or something. So this particular pile would go up north, but because if you're doing the whole pit, I mean, you're running maybe 10, 12 piles, plus you're doing this. Most pits now, they move in, crush, move out. You don't know what's coming and going.
Yeah.
You know, like Stordahl, he's just a factory, you know.
Yeah. So right.
I don't know what.
Yeah.
Some material they get into is nothing but pure rock.
Yeah. Right.
So there would be not a problem of isolating that material. When you start getting into overburden, yeah, and you start throwing that in, then it'll be outside the mix. My concern is, how do you know that it's been segregated? Yeah. But somebody may. I mean, it's more up to you guys. Mm-hmm. The compliance part of it would be the tougher part if you didn't certify everything out of the pit. But it makes it tough. How big an area around the outside? I guess if you're walking around the pit, how big a buffer would you have to consider? Or is the buffer 1,000 feet away where there's a field of thistles, and come fall when they seed out and they blow into your piles, then you're not certified anymore.
Right.
Just a second. Bill, I can hear you. Did you have a question?
No. The only thing on this certified weak street gravel, I was just kind of wondering, is it really that much of a problem or they just have certain areas that they want to make sure that it's utilized, I guess,
It's my understanding. Yeah, oh, sorry, Bill. It's my understanding that there are contractors who, as part of their work, they're running into contracts that are requesting weed-free gravel. So that would be the reason. Yeah.
And I think I heard something said about the overburden. Is realistically, the gravel is going to be pretty clean, except for what blows in on the piles. But the overburden would be the only thing that would be, my estimation would be a concern. So, anyhow, yeah.
Hey, Bill.
So that's the only question I had on it there, yeah.
Hey, Bill, this is Lee. One of the concerns I had, even with the piles, is if you've got tansy 1,000 feet away, which, or thistles 1,000 feet away, when they get ripe, they blow, and they're not discriminatory where they land. So
right.
they could land in the pile.
That's the only thing I have on it. So interesting that we're getting into this. So
there's
already. Can I go ahead and sign off now then?
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds good, Bill. Thanks a lot. Hope your recovery goes well.
I gotta get out of the car, and I don't think you want to hear me scream. So.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Bill.
See you, Bill.
Okay. Bye.
So there are already standards in place for how we would inspect. Those are the standards that we followed on our previous two gravel inspections, and it would just be just like weed-free. We would follow how many times we visit the site, what we look for, what's allowable, what's not. So at that point, it's up to the inspector just to, follow the standards and either sign off on it or not. So it's pretty clear, written down from, is it NASMA or?
Yeah, it's national standards. Yeah.
National standards, and we would just follow those.
How do you prove it? I mean, can't put twine on gravel, so.
I'm not sure. I think there's the form that you would fill out, and they would need to have the form for that.
That pit would be certified.
So you wouldn't be certifying any of the gravel piles, actually, unless there's weeds growing in them. You're just certifying the perimeter, then.
By the
It's basically what you're inspecting, because there's no way you can expect crushed gravel. I mean, you look at the pile, it's crushed gravel, and it should be clean, but like Lee says, you can get seeds blown. I mean, it could be loaded with seed, but there's no way to tell that. So you're just going to examine that, maybe the neighbors.
Well,
however.
And how many times you're going to visit the site and, you're going to look at the piles, and if you see any kind of germination, that would be obviously your red flag.
Right.
But thistles are tansy doesn't germinate readily, right away.
Yeah,
it's 2-3 years or 15 years or whatever down the road with those two. I'm only picking those two because, and I, you know, a lot of times in the fall, it's kind of like cottonwood.
Yeah.
Cottonwood embers, seeds that blow and
flower everywhere.
Yeah, flower.
I think in reading the national standards on it and why they came up with them or how they came up with them, one of the points they did make in there is that it's a program that's really about the best efforts. I mean, even if a PIT gets certified, there is that caveat that we're not guaranteeing anything.
Yeah, not
so
yeah,
that's a good discussion.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, well, we'll have some further discussion, I'm sure, on that. Number four.
Okay, just
moving to here. Yeah,
just a quick update on county organization since we last met. We, as vegetation management, which is where field inspection is, Kevin being the manager of vegetation management, we have now been reassigned to Clark County Public Works Department, Environmental Services Department, doesn't exist anymore. So the different pieces went different directions. So now we're underneath Heath Henderson, Public Works Director. That's who Kevin reports to. And shortly here, probably in a few weeks to a month or so, we'll be relocating actually to this location in one of the older buildings here.
We like this one.
Yeah.
Actually, this would be nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little smaller than this, but it's the old soils lab over there. And but we continue to function as always. It's just a different department, and Kevin has a different person that he reports to, but I don't.
Location it's all falling into place just fine.
Good.
So, Casey, is the public going to be able to get into your building easier? We're having that conversation with parks in a way.
Yeah.
You know,
we've been talking about that, whether people come to this admin building over here and then they call over and somebody comes to meet them, or we just allow people to
open that gate.
Yeah, we haven't. I don't think that's been fully resolved.
Even the board were saying you can have the gate open, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, people need access.
Without
having to go through.
If they go through here, they're going to be mad by the time they get to you.
Yeah. That's always good.
Yeah. And that happened a couple of times when we were downtown.
I was
just kind of hard
this morning.
Yeah. Stop somebody that's already angry and make them angrier. Okay. Well, we'll look forward to all that. And then number five. Update on the assessment.
Okay, yeah, so just briefly, a reminder, a few months ago I contacted you guys and we talked about the possibility of an assessment what that would mean in terms of you guys' involvement with the assessment and how that works with county management and the BOCC. And I think Kevin probably kind of update us on where that's at in terms of the thought process.
Yeah, so there's been no further movement on it. Basically, the county manager's office asked me to look into it. There's the ability for the county to have a weed assessment, noxious weed assessment, and what would it look like, and what do other counties do? So I compiled a bunch of information that was given to us by the state and gave it to the county manager's office, and I don't know if it's died or it's on their list of things to talk about in the future, but at this point it's not part of the 17-18 budget or any discussions since we've been working on that. So it's kind of a wait and see, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
What initiated it, it was trying to get some relief to the county's general fund.
Yes.
And
yes.
Provide them a revenue stream.
Right.
And I've been before in the past, before you're adamantly against it, mm-hmm. because, and the reason for it is, as far as a weed free forage craft, but the straw, the county turns around and uses a lot of that product. And if you started assessing people, people will pull out of it. I didn't go for weed free this last year. My quality was down, and that's the reason I didn't. But, so then you require it. The county requires it. So if you start putting an assessment on it, people drop out, then it's going to have to be brought in from someplace else and end up costing the county more in their projects. That was my take behind it. Other than that, so I don't know how expensive it is to administer. That's the reason I'm sitting on the board, to put a farmer's perspective in there. Yeah. And I talked with the past county commissioners, mm-hmm. and I went in for 15 minutes, and they kept me there for an hour. But and it kind of died, I think, after that. So that's still my perspective.
I just wanted to differentiate. Yeah. So what you were talking about is we had brought to you a proposal that the former environmental services director wanted us to start charging money for the weed-free forage inspections.
Yeah.
And that was purely on a cost recovery basis. Kind of like you're applying for a permit, and then we do the work, and then here's your certification. What we've been talking about recently is that at the state level, the state RCWs allow counties to levy a tax assessment for the noxious weed control program in general. So everything that we do as a program, Casey's job, Kara's job, Justin's job, all of the work with the public, that would be paid for by a levy. And instead of it coming straight out of the general fund, it would be this levy. They would set up a different fund for noxious weed control. So that's what the county manager asked me to look into. I think the fee for service on weed-free forage is dead. That's not coming back up that I'm aware of.
Good. And I think that we may have been, and I'm maybe a little presumptuous here, maybe a little warm to the idea of the assessment, because everybody in the county would pay for it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It wasn't
right.
just the guy that was putting up the material. It would help pay their wages and that, Mark. So I'm not advocating that, but I'm just throwing that out. It was a little more palatable.
Okay. We'll see if the county manager wants us to look into it and bring it to the weed board and BOCC.
Would you like
in the future,
to weigh in on that? Would you mind?
Yeah, well, actually, I just come from a county's in soil conservation meeting. I think 5 or 6 other counties have the assessment now for conservation. So we're about the only one for conservation. So I think the board next year will look at maybe the both of them, the weed and the conservation. You know, the grants are just drying up on conservation. So we got to do something for them. So if we can do something for them and help you, you know, at the same time.
On that,
okay, we answered that question.
Yeah.
On that side question, Lee, with the specific to the weed-free forage inspections and you know, how much that costs and the time and that sort of thing. This last year, we certified 26 different crops and about a little over 900 acres. So you look at we did that 26 times. Each of those, I shouldn't say 26. It's not 26 parcels, it's 26 different requests, and each time it could have been 4 or 5 different, you know, fields or whatever.
Right.
And so you figure that, you know, not always, but oftentimes you're at each field twice, you know, so that's, now you're 52 times, which includes, you know, walking around and all that kind of stuff. So there's some time involved, but not a huge sum of time, you know, compared to other things that we do.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Do we have a copy of that?
I can get it for you. Actually, that's going to come up a little bit later with with a year-end report.
Okay. Sounds like we just did the budget update, but we'll go ahead with more of that.
I have
Kevin.
I just have a little bit of information for you guys. Where's that? Take a look. I don't have enough copies, so you guys can all share. But so this basically shows the vegetation management budget as proposed, and the hearings start today on the budget downtown. So it shows in the first column is 2013-2014, what our budget looked like. 2015-16, it went down a little bit by about 300,000. And then in 2017 and 2018, the proposal that's going before the council is to bump that back up a little bit, and it's at about 2.8 million for the program.
Did you get a raise?
No. And so the dissolving of environmental services afforded us a little bit of ability to bring back some of the general fund subsidy that this program had prior to creating that department. So it's kind of bringing us back, like making us a little bit more whole than we used to be. So that's going to allow us to do a little bit more than we've done in the last couple of years. And then as you see below, there are decision packages that we've put in. We've put in one decision package for a couple of new vehicles. We've got some really old, outdated vehicles that have been loaners from the shop, and they're just, one of them's at like 190,000 miles, and it's, things are falling off of it, so it's time. And we're also talking about switching those to, instead of our, we've got a couple of like F-350s, switching to some light duty vehicles for the guys like Justin and Kara or Casey that do more more driving around and inspecting rather than the actual noxious weed control work on county lands. So it will save money and gas, and it'll be a, I think it'll be a more suitable vehicle for that type of work.
Kevin, maybe if you could just quickly differentiate between field inspection and the rest of the spray group in terms of this budget.
Yeah. So this budget covers the entire vegetation management program, and we're split kind of in two groups. One group does control work on county lands, and primarily this group does all of the education and compliance work in the county. So they're dealing with the private property owners, the state agencies, the cities, everybody finding the weeds and making sure that they are controlled according to state law, going to enforcement when that's necessary. So the budget, when it says it's 2.8 million, about just under 2 million of that is reimbursable work. So we do work for other people and they pay us, and that counts as revenue. So this program functions on what's going to be about $800,000. And that, so that's primarily their salaries and benefits, and then a little bit for temporaries to help them, or you know, other equipment and supplies that they might need throughout the course of the year. So that's roughly how we're split out, give or take. So that means that like the general fund subsidy for this program is about $800,000. Wherein in 2015 and 16 it was like $400,000. So we're gonna have a little bit more breathing room for these guys next year and be able to cover more of the county. They've been stretched really thin, and it's been really hectic in the middle of, like, say July when it's tansy season. Carmen's answering the phone like 30 phone calls a day, sending these people, I mean, they're like chickens with their heads cut off. So that's the other two decision packages are one just a little bit more for temporary employment services, which is, you know, we staff up in the, when it's weed season, and we bring on temporary employees to help us get all the work accomplished. And one of the reasons for this request is to make sure that these folks have another person to cover part of the cover another part of the county, like basically. Instead of having three districts that they look at, maybe have four districts that they can split up the county better.
Yeah, I got one of them letters last year.
Did you?
Huh? New piece of ground. I cleared it all and added all, and I ended up with water hemlock. Mm.
We try not to favor anybody.
Yeah,
we
want to make sure everybody's. They gave me 3 days to get it done because it was that was all that was left. They gave me 15 days, but I had the letter was dated 2 days before the closing. Yeah, I think.
And then this last decision package is for the soils lab over here, just to finish the remodeling. It's basically, it was an old soils lab, so it wasn't fit for having people as in an office environment. So it's completely being remodeled inside and new furniture. And the biggest cost is actually bringing the data, like the fiber optic lines, to the building. So again, this is all proposed. So like I said, the hearings start today. And continue tomorrow night, and you're going to be busy.
Give him another cookie.
Yeah. So anything can happen, right? Anything can happen between now and Wednesday when they're finished. But this is what's proposed in the county manager's budget.
I'm surprised that two vehicles cost that much.
So that the $99,000 is it's $30,000 per vehicle as a placeholder. And then the other is additional ongoing cost that we build into. So they have a replacement fund. Mm-hmm. So you pay into the replacement fund every month, kind of like putting money away in the bank. So yeah, that when you get to 10 years down the road and you need to replace it, you got $30,000 in the bank again.
Sure.
So that's part of why it looks so inflated.
Okay.
And then it also includes all of the repair services, maintenance over the 2 year period, and fuel.
Okay. So, because I know
that's I looked at that this morning
with the city of Richfield, and we've been updating vehicles, and they're nowhere near that amount for a drive around rig. Okay.
Yeah.
Good explanation.
And they could come in lower than that. That's what the fleet manager told me to put in. So there's
radios and lights and all the other stuff.
Yeah, it's decals, it's fully loaded.
At least started.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Knotweed grant, Justin.
Pass these around to you guys.
Hmm.
So Clark County Vegetation Management applies for a knotweed grant to control knotweed in Clark County from WSDA. It's a biennial type grant, so this was 2015-2016. Late last year, we surveyed the Little Washougal and the Washougal, and especially the tributaries. We're trying to find the farthest point upstream where knotweed is in the county. That way we can eliminate it at all these small little tributaries and streams. It likes to break off from its original spot, float downstream, and then in any flood event it'll stick wherever it lands. And then it'll reinfest places we've already treated. Mm. So we're trying to eliminate it at the source and move in a systematic way. In past grant seasons, we focused on the East Fork of the Lewis River. The Washougal has received attention years past. There's actually a chart in that report you can look at. But we revisited the Washougal because it's time. There's enough knotweed there that we can focus on again. We had a successful season this year. Went pretty well overall. We faced some issues, and there were some properties where landowners just didn't receive our mailing, or they didn't respond to our mailings, and we weren't able to get a hold of them by phone or any other way. They have a gate or something like that, and we can't just go knock on the door. There was some knotweed that got away from us on Washougal, so we kind of have those records and can revisit that. it's recorded. But for the most part, we did a great job out there before a flood came through. We had a high water event that was right at the end of the season, so it worked out pretty well, though.
Can you leave some kind of a brochure on those gated driveways?
And we did, yeah. We have door hangers that
okay,
are...
Okay, door hangers.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Yeah, we leave them right on the gate. We sent out a second mailing to the people who we noticed they do have knotweed. So it wasn't just, hey, be on the lookout for knotweed. It was, we noticed you have knotweed, you know, when we were surveying on adjacent properties. And that was pretty successful. We had a lot of people who did respond to the second mailing. But there were, like I say, still a few that didn't respond at all.
So what happens if they don't respond at all?
So the grant provides for actually enforcement. That is the goal, is to control it everywhere. So just as we enforce on other Class B noxious weeds, knotweed is designated. We would prefer that everybody just allow us to treat it for free. You know, we have trained technicians that we employ every year that we can come along through. Yeah. We need their permission. That's why we send out the waivers.
Do they ever get a friendly letter from the PA's office?
Well,
that's what we do for election.
Essentially, right. Yeah, we get to the point where we send out this letter that is just a little, you know, they send out the initial letter and then that didn't work, so we send out another letter that says, oh, by the way,
yeah,
enforcement is an option here. And then you know, you'd be surprised how many people then allow you to do the work.
And we're willing to do it for free.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we'll have a contractor do it and put a lien on your property.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
You know, kind of like baiting.
What if the knotweed is in amongst bamboo?
So bamboo is not listed. It's not a noxious weed, according to Washington State. We're able to inject knotweed. If there's a sensitive thing that they want to keep, we can inject right into the canes. We know the difference between bamboo and Japanese knotweed. We would only kill what we're supposed to kill. Mm-hmm. So if there's like fruit trees or other things around the knotweed, we do have the ability to take out just the knotweed, yeah, instead of just spraying all over.
I've had a problem with a neighbor that has that. Mm-hmm. And it's grown into the adjacent properties because it's in the corner, but it's also in the bamboo that he planted.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also wondering why bamboo is not a noxious weed. It is in other areas in Washington.
Can I have you introduce yourself, please?
My name is Marlene Cavonius, and I'm just a resident here that has nightmares about this man's bamboo because you don't know it's coming into your property until it's 6 to 10 feet in underground.
Great root
and
system.
Throws the shoots up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost impossible to get out. And at my age, with my medical problems, I can't just do it myself.
What is your area of the county are you from?
I'm in Hazelville.
Hazelville? Okay, thank you.
Marlene, I can answer a little bit about the bamboo being a noxious weed or not. The state doesn't, as Justin mentioned, the state doesn't have bamboo listed as a noxious weed anywhere in the state.
Yes, it does. Ellensburg.
That's Sydney, no, probably.
Well, it's potentially two different things. So there's a state noxious weed list, which has A, B, and C weeds. And then there's also what's called a watch list or a list of weeds that aren't listed that as officially noxious weeds, which is a legal term. The state listed noxious weed is an actual legal term. If there are municipalities or counties that want to add weeds for, you know, kind of something that they want to prioritize, that sort of thing, that's fine. But they're not considered noxious weeds in terms of enforcement by the state weed law. So possibly Ellensburg has kind of just a local ordinance or a local situation where they really want to work on it. But it's not something that the weed board is involved in terms of enforcement. Now, having said that, one of the main reasons that we're here is education. And so if it's a matter of going to the neighbor and saying, you know, explaining, you know, how aggressive bamboo is, how it's difficult to contain, ways that they could work on containing it, that sort of thing, we're happy to help. But it just wouldn't be an enforcement situation.
Because I've looked for all kinds of avenues to keep it, you know, controlled. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've gone to, like, different nurseries and stuff like that. And Sagawa, you know, I've talked to the people at Sagawa Nursery, and they have something called bamboo barrier, but it's not guaranteed.
Yeah. No.
And if I spend that kind of money to put that in ground, I have to pay somebody to come and dig along the fence line. Yeah. To put that in and have it not guaranteed, I'm just throwing my money in the fireplace.
Yeah, it depends a lot on what type of bamboo it is. Some of them, the taller right. ones, they're more aggressive. Their root system can be fairly deep before it starts going horizontal. Most of them are fairly shallowly rooted. But and then there's clumping bamboo versus running bamboo. There's different types. But if you have a neighbor that already has a very well-established, in his mind, ornamental in your mind, infestation, those bamboo barriers... sometimes are not deep enough for a really well-established bamboo clump. So,
you know, when I was talking to the specialists at Sagawa's, they said it would break through the pots.
Yeah.
They said they had some planted in the water area mm-hmm. where they have decorative stuff like that, and it's cracking the cement. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's, and, you know, it's like impossible to control. And the thing is like I said, this particular bamboo, you don't know until it's so much underground into your yard and it's throwing these shoots up all along that runner. It's, and this man has been cited for lots of things, the knotweed and the thistle, and the, now he's got the bamboo there, okay. and the bamboo is running. Mm. And it's, and he will not even talk to me. So I can't even try. He wanted to put a wood fence up there so that he would have privacy. But the bamboo will ruin the wood fence. Well, I mean, it's a waste of money.
Is there a control that you spray and it'll kill it?
There is. There's a couple of different ways of going after it. That Marlene could do on her side. She has every right, once it's gone onto her side of the property, she has every right to do what she can to control it, because now it's a nuisance on her side. Whether or not he'd be willing to work on some of that on his side, it doesn't sound like it. But we can definitely go over some of those control options. It's not easy to control. I mean, it's in the grass family, but it's not really easy to control
like grass.
Now there is one possible option for the weed board here locally, and that is that once a year, or you can do it throughout the year, but it's considered once a year at the state level, the county weed boards can request or suggest new additions to the state weed list. And so if the county weed board chose to ask for a specific species of bamboo, because there's lots of different ones, to be added to the state noxious weed list, they could do that, and then the state weed board would consider whether or not to add it. One of the problems with adding ornamental plants to the list, where you have local growers who are invested monetarily in that plant in terms of growing it for resale value, is this: the state weed board really has to look at that in terms of, you know, is that going to be something that you're essentially going to take away that potential business? And an example would be English holly a few years ago. English holly is extremely invasive in the understory of northwest woodlands. They considered it, and they were really close to listing it as a Class C weed, and then the lobby for the English holly growers association, I'm not sure that's the exact term of their association, lobbied against it, because for them, it's not only an ornamental tree, but it's also used for cuttings for, you know, Christmas wreaths and things like that. So that's one of those things where it would really have to weigh it closely. But that is an option. That is a possibility of trying to get it on the list. But even before then, we can at least try to go to your neighbor and say, hey, here's some reasons this is an issue. Here's some ways you can try to address it. So we're happy to at least try that. There's not an enforcement behind it, but it's education.
What I kind of think he did is planted it as a view barrier.
Probably.
You know?
Yeah, that's
and
common.
The thing is, then afterwards he asked me about putting the wooden fence in. And, of course, that's a waste now, unless he wants to take the bamboo out.
All right. So you guys can...
Yeah, we'll work on that.
Talk with Marlene and get the address of your neighbor and that kind of thing and see what we can do that way first, and then they can bring it back to us. Okay. Item 8, year-end report. Casey?
Okay, yeah. So I'm not sure. I don't believe it's been something that's been done much in the past, but what we'd like to do is have a year-end report from the field inspection program that goes to the weed board. Then, ideally, for efficiency's sake, we would then take that same report once you guys have looked it over, approved it, then that would be the report that we would send on to the BOCC. What we should be doing is once a year giving a report from the weed board to the BOCC. And so if we can kind of tie those two together, not everything has to be in both reports. So I don't need an answer today, but I'm going to try to work on it. But you know, it during December, just things that you might want to have in there. So there's, there could be appendices that have our different appendices that have our different knotweed reports kind of attached. But I'd also like to have just general statistics on what the field inspection program has done in terms of, number of landowners contacted, number that received a letter, number that went to violation, those types of things. And I'd like to also have a section in there just, new weeds we're seeing, potential issues that we're seeing, that sort of thing. But if you guys have other topics that you'd like us to address, just let me know.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good.
And the same goes for the BOCC as well. If there's something that you would like to see from the report,
well, yeah, and I think like in after the first year with the new board, it's been quite a while since we've had a work session on it.
Okay.
And we'll probably request that when that report comes, have a work session on it. Just gets you out there and give you some PR.
So. Well, yeah, the weeds or the certified hay thing and that especially and some other ones. So some of the weeds. So I know we did some fines or sent some letters and got some response this year, so that was good. So, yeah, final report would be great.
Okay.
2017 weed list.
Yeah, Kara's going to start on this one.
Kara's going to do that.
As far as update for the changes to the 2017 state list, there's only a few, just a handful. One would be the reclassification of the Ravina grass from Class A to B, and this is an escaped ornamental they're having problems with on the east side, especially in Benton, Chelan, Grant, and Yakima counties. So it was originally put on the Class A list in 2015. After doing a little bit more research and identification, they realized that it is planted more widely out there as an ornamental than they originally thought. So they are moving, they're going to be moving the Ravina grass from a Class A to a Class B, except in counties that I mentioned earlier that are having problems with it, Benton, Chelan, Grant, Yakima. Also, Cowlitz County has noticed a couple of outbreaks of it escaping where it was originally planted, so it is still going to be a Class A in Cowlitz County. Other than that, there's some designation changes in Pierce County, about three different Class B weeds. They're going to undesignate myrtle spurge, and they're going to designate meadow knapweed and meadow hawkweed for control in Pierce County. But those are the changes to the state, or the proposed changes to the state list. I have that information here if you guys wanted to read about that further.
Just real quick here. On the Ravenna grass, several of the ornamental tufted grasses we've noticed have have escaped and are moving around. Pampas grass has been known for a while to kind of escape, and oftentimes on roadsides. The Ravenna grass, also Karen and I both separately, but then didn't really realize what we were looking at and kind of came to the conclusion at different times. Found some what's called Chinese silver grass as well, which is another one of those tufted grasses similar to pampas grass. So we'll keep an eye on that. What we have with our, like Kevin was talking about, we have a spray program addition to our vegetation management. And so with that, the three of us, when we're out driving the roads, we have we spend a fair amount of time doing right-of-way control work because we don't want to be asking a private property owner to control their tansy if there's tansy on the right-of-way, obviously. And so as we see some of those tufted grasses escaping, we'll go ahead and hit them and just kind of keep an eye on them.
Good.
Any questions about state changes?
No. I have a specimen here eventually, sometime. Okay. I don't see it on the agenda to bring out. I had an individual come and bring it to me a week ago, and I said, bring me some fresh Monday morning. And so he brought it to me at coffee this morning. And he brought me a specimen. And I said, what size bottle is it in?
Yeah.
But it did.
Is it sealed tight?
But yeah. So I don't know where on the agenda I'd like to bring that up.
Okay. We'll get that.
As a plant that
right at the end there. Okay. On that?
Yeah.
That
so county? Yeah. So in terms of state list, as you know, our county weed list, and I kind of reformatted it here as the kind of what I'm calling the simpler version. Our county list, we've always, you guys have always taken a look at the state weed list and decided whether or not you wanted to move any class C's up to a class B is primarily the main thing you guys have looked at. So if you look at this one here on the front page where it actually says Clark County Noxious Weed List, this box in the bottom right are the class C weeds that you guys have moved up to a B at requiring control in the past. So everything on this front page here is required for control. Everything on the back page is not. That's as it currently stands. And what I'd like to, it doesn't have to look exactly like this, is obviously kind of just cut and dry, you know, no photos or anything like that, so it'll be improved in terms of how it looks. But what I would like to do to make it really simple for the public, whether it's at the fair or us sending flyers out or what have you, and simpler for us as well, is to make it cut and dry like this, as opposed to here's an example of the list that we get from the state, and it gets a little right. It gets a little weird. And then I highlighted in orange my suggestions for you guys to mull over, and then in end of January, beginning of February, whenever we have our first meeting, where you guys adopt the county list from the state list at that time. Maybe if you guys can kind of mull over these that I've highlighted between now and then, so that when we go ahead and adopt it, you guys will be ready to make decisions. So on the front side, the ones that are highlighted in orange would be ones where they're designated by the state required for control. So we would need to send a letter to the state weed board and say, within Clark County, we would prefer that these not be designated for control. So that would be the thing there. And then the ones on the back that I highlighted would be the typical process. If you guys were interested, those would be ones that would be moved from a C, as in meaning not required to control, up to a B, meaning required to control. So those are just some of the ideas that I had. And then the other one is the two on the front there, the Canada thistle and gold thistle. That's something we probably need a little bit further discussion on. Right now, they're listed as required for control, but we don't actually go that direction with the public, because the county and the state and federal lands aren't requiring it. We can't really, in good conscience, ask the public to be requiring it. So that's something we really want to kind of focus on when we're making these decisions. And so those two I'd like to kind of talk about as well. It doesn't have to be today. We can have email discussions, and like I said, the main discussion would be the first meeting of the next year before we adopt, or what, right before you do the adoption. So.
Okay. All right. Looks like meeting schedule.
Oh, we had one thing that I goofed up when I change the agenda. Kara had one thing. She was just going to talk briefly about the how we go about making those decisions, or those decisions when we're doing our inspection. Yeah. Just real quick.
Okay.
So, sorry if I don't have copies enough for everybody. Maybe you guys can share those. What you're looking at here, the first one with the primary colors, is our weed priority matrix that we have been working with over the past several years. This is basically how inspectors make the decision on who gets a notice about their noxious weeds and who doesn't. Obviously, you have the list in front of you about the state and county, what needs to be, what is required for control. However, there's only three of us, and it's a big county. So we do the best that we can to follow this, and the priority matrix helps us as far as deciding, is it a negative economic impact to neighbors? Is it near high activity areas? Is it high in density? So this is how we decide if this field, this 20 acres, gets a notice for 12 tansy plant versus the neighbor that gets a notice for 70 tansy plants. So this is how we make our decision. This is how it currently looks. We're looking to kind of make some changes, revamp that with your guys' direction and advice. So this is what we're looking at now to changing it to. It's similar. Hopefully it's a little bit clearer to the public when they ask, how come I got a notice and my buddy Ralph over there didn't? They would be able to understand there's a lot of different possibilities as far as, you know, is it near a weed-free hay field? Is it a Class C? How much is it there? So that's a lot of decisions that we go through, and we all want to be on the same page and treat you know, everybody in the county the same, whether it be in Justin's area, my area, farther north, and this is how we do it.
Just one thing on how we went about, or why we decided there was a need for change, is that currently we have a fairly good system that involves, you know, we're surveying, we're putting things into a database. That database generates correspondence that goes to the landowner. But we want to change that a little bit. Right now, everybody would get a postcard that indicates, hey, you know, there is a state weed law, you have such and such weed, you know, you should control it. And then if we were to go back 2 weeks later and they haven't controlled it, then we would start the violation letter process that could eventually lead to a civil infraction. And we'd like to change that to make it easier for us, so that we have a situation where the weeds that we know we're not going to ever end up in a situation where we're finding them. We want to be able to have those be the ones where a postcard gets sent out, and then we can just send it, and really, unless they contact us with you know, control options or, you know, land surveys or whatever, that's the last time we'll make contact on that. And then the other ones that we know that we're concerned about, hemlock, tansy, Class A weeds, that sort of thing, wouldn't receive the postcard. They would receive, and the very first correspondence they would get from us is a letter with control options that also explains that, hey, this could go to an enforcement action. So that makes it more clear to the public, and it also makes it more efficient for us, because once we're out there and we've got a couple of hundred different you know, people that we're dealing with, it'd be nice if we could shave off the ones that we've already decided are a lower priority in terms of that. So that was the reason for kind of going a little bit different direction.
That's why I got my letter.
It is, yes.
I was a new owner, though.
Yeah, well, not only that, but right now, because it's not as clear as we're trying to make it, sometimes the county print office will get a little bit behind. So let's say I put it in the system. Come on, Lee, get with it, right? You know, and then by the time that postcard got to you, that 10-day or 20-day window or whatever is almost gone. And we ran into that a lot.
Yeah, right.
And so that way the postcard could potentially continue to be generated by the county mailroom, who does a good job with that. Because we know it doesn't matter when it gets there, because we're not going to end up with an enforcement action. Whereas the ones that we really want to concentrate on will start with a letter, and Carmen's the one that generates and mails those letters. So we know when the letter goes out is only a day or two before you receive it, and there's not that lag. So that's another one of the reasons for that. we want, because we got those calls a lot. Hey, wait a minute, I just got a postcard. You said I've got, you know, 2 weeks, and I got it, and I've got 3 days. That right. That happened to more than just you. So yeah. That's
and
part
other
of
departments too. I got one for another reason from a whole different area.
Oh, I was going to say from us? Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it happens.
We're not. We're subject to it, too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
We're on the weed board, but yeah. they take us. They're not discriminatory.
So sorry, Carrie. Yeah.
And actually, that poison, it was poison hemlock, but where was that? I couldn't figure out how they saw it. They had to use a satellite and come up the or went out on the freeway and shot back the other way.
We have those World War I binoculars that go out of the trenches.
Yeah.
We are, you know, this is what we do. So we can spot hemlock, and I spotted the hemlock, and we're going sometimes so quickly and thinking, okay, well, I need to cover this area of the county. And I remember vividly thinking, that name's familiar, you know, and sending it and going to the next one, that one, you know. So thank you for taking care of your poison hemlock. I appreciate it.
Well, I worked it up a couple of times and sprayed it. But actually, I have a spot on a place that I've leased for 30 years, and it's a manure pile. Mm-hmm. And that pile, we have sprayed it, tried to kill it. And it will, and we just shove out and add to it all the time when we clean out a shed. Mm-hmm. And I cannot kill it.
Yeah, poison hemlock seed is incredible.
It doesn't go any. There's no place else on the place, and it's a Milt Brown's 110 acre place. Oh. And but it's that one spot, there. And yeah. I think I probably brought it home from the refuge.
Oh, possible.
When I was down there running cattle on the refuge.
Yeah. Sounds like
and there was
waste piles.
And I think that's where it come from.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the things that as a resident, you know, you folks know about a lot of the plants that are people that move into these homes have no clue.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I have no clue what poison hemlock looks like.
Well, yeah. Field trip to Lee's place then.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and you can look at the pictures on the internet of different things, and it really doesn't give you that. I mean, there's so many plants that can look like that. I mean, you know, take thistle, for instance. How many varieties of thistle are there?
Yeah.
How do you know which one is the one they're talking about?
Yeah.
You know, and this thistle that blew from my neighbor's is in my rose bed right now, and I'm having a hard time controlling that.
Yeah.
Because the roses have thorns. They just grab that, and then the seed drops in there.
Yeah, let's set up a time. I can come over, you know, late spring when things are up and kind of give you some tips here and there.
We've got the thistle there right now.
Yeah, well, maybe now we're getting some freezing weather. Maybe you're fine for the winter.
But yeah. All right.
Yeah, that matrix looks good. I mean, it'll keep everybody equal, it looks like to me, and make it simple and equal to everybody, so at least explainable. Yeah.
And this is something that's a work in progress that we're going to continue to flesh out this final draft.
Right.
So we would appreciate any feedback, any other considerations you would like us to make.
Okay.
So what if the government owns the property?
The government is treated just like any other property owner within the county.
Yeah. So it'd be nice if that was on the list somehow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the biggest call I get is that, well, the county owns it, to at least tell the public you're treated just like everybody else. If the county owns the land, we're getting a letter just like Lee gets a letter.
I agree. And that's why our education and outreach events are so important. And our workshops that we do at the fair, at the Home and Garden Show. We have booths there, and we have plants there that the public can look at. We can talk to them about ID and go over, you know, what we do and why we do it and the services we provide.
Because that's one of the biggest complaints that I always heard, or I had, is like driving 503 from Battleground North.
Right.
You want me to control something. Then I'm on a state highway, and I see knapweed and tansy and thistle like crazy through there.
Exactly.
And turn up my road, and maybe that's a county road, and I see some stuff there.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going, wait a minute. And then I'll hear that from everybody along that route that drives it. And it's, you know, I'm not going to do it if you're not going to do it.
So two things with that. One, to follow up on the government properties, the state, county, and local government properties are treated the same as everyone else. The federal government properties, like, for example, Ridgeville Wildlife Refuge, were directed at the state level, that should be kind of a mutual cooperative effort. So and to their credit, I mean, they have a lot of property and they have a lot of weeds, but using Richfield Wildlife Refuges as an example, they've done a lot better the last few years. I mean, way better than they used to. So we don't really, we can send them a notice, but we can't really take it farther than that except for a cooperative effort.
It doesn't work the other way around, though.
No. Nope.
Of course not.
No.
And then with what Jerry was talking about with roadsides, the I've only been the weed coordinator for less than a year, but I've been with the county for about 12. And it's just been an on again, off again thing, let's say Washington Department of Transportation as an example. And sometimes they have the budget and they you know, a little bit more cooperative, sometimes they're not. But this last couple of years, actually, CARE's been working with them quite a bit. They've done a pretty good job, including this year when we really had a pretty bad tansy outbreak.
Yeah.
And we contacted them several times, and we ourselves and some of our temporary employees were out on county right-of-way spraying and pulling and, you know, cutting and bagging. And so was WashDOT. They did a really good job this year. Not on all the highways. Highway 14 was a little bit iffy still, but I-5, 502, 503... I actually saw them hand pulling and spraying. So, WashDOT has actually changed the way they're doing some of their roadside maintenance. They've always had basically primarily a mowing program, and the way, because of their budget and time, the way they go about doing mowing is they wait till things dry out and they mow it once.
Right.
Well, as you know, with weed, that just spreads seed around.
Yeah.
So they've changed that partly for budgets, but partly because they're changing how they look at pollinators. As you know, there's a big push with decline in bee populations, both domestic and wild, and butterflies in general. And so they're using kind of the budget and the pollinator aspect to form a little bit different plan, which is they're going to be doing less mowing. You probably noticed that this year. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be doing a little bit more spraying strategically. Oh. So even about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I saw them spraying blackberry on I-5, you know, with a handgun, you know, directed spraying. So we'll see how that works. I mean, that's in, you know, the opinion of people that know the weed business, that's a better way to go, and we'll just see how it goes. Oh. So.
Yeah.
Railroads improve, too.
Railroads improve, too? Good.
Now we just got to work on BPA.
Yeah.
Actually, they're improved as well.
They have improved.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we still got a couple of minutes. Bylaw changes? Is that wait till January? Or?
Yeah. That was just if there's time. Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll discuss that later. And, we still didn't do meeting schedule.
Never can.
Yeah. Meeting schedule. As far as dates for next year?
Yeah, obviously with just two of you guys here, we don't have to pin down exact dates, except maybe we should, with the first one, try to get that on the calendar, and then if it needs to be changed, then we can. As you know, we adopt take the state weed law and adopt a county weed law. We want to do that by the end of January, beginning of February. We don't want to wait too much longer than that. Ideally, once the weed board has been reformed, you have your first meeting within about 30 days. Carmen, correct me if I'm wrong, but we have the quarterly meeting, so four times a year. It's not exactly quarterly, but also we want to be able to have that on the county website and published once we decide on a schedule, published in the local paper, so that if people want to come to the meetings, we don't want to change it after that point. So we want to make sure it's ironed out by then. But if we could set up the first one, that would be ideal. And I believe
what's your wishes?
The first Monday in February is the 6th. We've traditionally done the first Monday of the month.
Okay.
And I think February was always, that's the one where we adopt the weed list, so. And then it's been like February, April, July, and
December.
But I mean, that none of those have to be set in stone. I think the first one is the most important.
But you can put that down as a list if you want and email it out, and we can respond if it's good or
if
bad.
It's bad.
Yeah. If it conflicts with something else. But, so the 6th.
Long before you publish it.
Yeah. 6th of February.
Yeah. I think the public, as a general rule, has no clue. You have meetings. I didn't know it until I started talking. I don't know who was the first person, but Carmen helped me out. And I went to the meeting in June or July?
July.
Out at the old place, and nobody was there.
Yeah.
It had moved.
Yeah, we had a bit of an internal reorganization kind of a thing, and so in the last year we've had it at Brush Prairie, we've had it at Heritage Farm, and we've had it here. So hopefully we'll find a permanent spot here, and we won't.
I hope we can too.
It's
an organization that needs to be there.
Yeah.
Because I myself, as a resident, would not want to plant something that's going to cause problems for my neighbor.
Right.
I would not want to have something there that's going to cause problems.
Yeah.
I'm that kind of person.
It looks like it's edible.
Yeah.
Oh.
It does. So we'll do February 6th at 9 o'clock.
And then we'll
send an invite.
Yeah. We'll do that for the first one, and we'll see that maybe the entire board or the four of us at least can make that. We'll start with that one, and tentatively, if you want to send out the rest of the dates, pick the first Monday of April and July, whatever it was there.
Yeah.
Just go ahead and send that out as a tentative list.
Okay.
Sounds good.
And 9 o'clock works good for me, as opposed to we were doing 9:30 before, so even earlier.
That's fine. Yeah, earlier. It doesn't matter. Earlier.
And we'll try to have it here. Does it here work?
Okay.
So one thing, and it won't matter in 2017, but it might in 2018, is that ideally we have the positions decided on with plenty of time for the BOCC to make their final approval, you know, without there being crunch time. So possibly instead of a December meeting in 2018, we might want to go with a November meeting or mid-November or something like that.
Yeah, that's fine. Wouldn't be an issue. Yeah, maybe they'll not appoint us.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I think we're done with everything there, except Lee's got a question on this plant. I guess we can do that during the meeting.
It looks like watercress.
Oh, that's shiny green.
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah, that's a noxious weed.
Oh, did Paul Snowy bring that to you?
No, he did not.
We've been talking with him over the last week or so. Yeah, he found quite a bit of it out there.
That's what's happening right now. Around it already? Yep.
We already have him.
Ready for that one.
That's like cilantro.
Oh, no, that's a good
that's another one. He has about an acre and a quarter of it. It's in his timber path.
It's bad.
Oh, that.
It's pretty, though.
Well, we don't have to say his last name, but I think I have the same photos. I think Paul's been out there.
Could have been. Les Greer.
Yes.
Yes.
Same fellow. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to take him another card.
31st, 45th.
Yeah.
Right across the street from 299. Mm-hmm.
You want to see some ugly photos? I'll forward them to you. He has about a 2-acre timber patch there, and I would say the majority of it is nothing but this in the understory. Mm-hmm. It's bad.
Wow.
This was a class A weed a couple of years ago that came up from the Willamette Valley. When we started looking for it, or they started looking for it a few years ago, we're like, okay, we found it here and there, and then once we started really looking for it, it's all over the place. And I think they're just starting to see it in Ridgefield.
Is it good cattle forage?
No, I wish.
No.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure if it's been tried.
Shopping makes silage.
It's just like clover.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Because it was everywhere and we knew it wasn't something that could be eradicated, it was bumped down from a Class A to a Class B in Clark County. And that's actually one of them that I highlighted for us to discuss as maybe it's not even that. Because it's not something we're going to be able to get the public to control and alert. Now, we want to do a lot of education outreach, go over methods of control, try to get people aware of it so that they know what this thing is. But in terms of enforcement, it's going to be too difficult.
So does it crowd everything else out?
Yeah, it can. Now, probably his forest understory, it looks like a very well-maintained piece of property, and probably there wasn't a thick vegetative layer there anyway. It's not like garlic mustard or some of these plants that have the allelopathic effect where it extrudes chemical, it extrudes like a natural herbicide out of its roots. It's not like that necessarily, but it just puts out so much seed and it can generate throughout the growing season. So you'll have two or three waves of it. This year, maybe even four, since we had such a long season. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those you really have to be controlling it on a constant basis. But yeah, okay. Through Paul, I were setting up at a meeting to go talk to the guy already.
Okay. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Good.
Okay. And that's one that I've been seeing. I just handed out those because that's a Class A weed.
Yep.
It's pretty widespread in parts of Oregon, but it's still limited distribution around here. But I'm seeing more and more of it.
So. Where have you seen it?
well, excuse me. There's several places in Vancouver, and one or two in East Vancouver. Oh. Mm.
And this is primarily in planting beds and bark and mulch, correct?
That's right. Yep.
So that's one of the concerns we would have.
We have some right outside our building, actually.
So we might want to get to a couple of the nurseries and see if maybe it's some sort of infestation in some of their materials.
I've noticed that I've gotten new weeds from buying bark and that I've never had in my yard before. And you don't see it. It's because the seeds are down in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of back to where we were talking about the gravel and all that. The seeds are in there. You don't know that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So might be something we still want to discuss some more.
But checking nurseries and landscaping places.
Yep. You know these the new stormwater rules, the importation of soil that you have to mix with your soil to get the, you know, the water. Some of these developers are getting a lot of Willamette Valley soil in. And so that's going to be, I mean, you got subdivisions with, you know, 600-700 yards of material coming in because you're doing 8 inches of the whole site. Mm-hmm. But if you got clay under it, you're hauling a lot of material in.
Wow.
I know in the remediation in Ridgefield, they're going through some of the streets from PWT, and they're taking all the soil out of the yards and bringing beautiful stuff in, but I don't know where it's coming from.
Yeah.
I've never seen any of it around.
Yeah.
But like you're saying, truckload after truckload of it's coming in, so it's coming from somewhere.
Mm-hmm. So it gets moved around.
Potential, as you're saying, how the one out of that.
Yeah. Sounds like something that we should be looking at too, the new developments, just kind of looking around some of the natural areas and stormwaters and stuff. And,
okay. A few weeks after they're starting to germinate,
okay.
See a lot of interesting weeds.
Yeah.
Okay. Nothing else for the good of the order. I will adjourn the meeting and we'll look forward to have a good Christmas.
Yeah, thanks.
New Year, and we'll see you in February, if not before, for something.
All right, great.
Yep, thank you.
And we'll send out that report and have you guys look at it through an email, or I can hand deliver or whatever.
Yep, all those work.
Sounds
all right.
Good.
Thank you, Mr. Bolt.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Yeah.